One of you must follow me into the firm to keep the family name going. My father spoke these words to us over the dinner table. But it turned out that none of us wanted to take up the law. My brother works in the contemporary art world in Australia. My sister is a journalist, and I do this. So the country law practice of Helmore, Barron and Scott has had its middle name extinguished recently. Looking back on this vocational option now, I can see that there were some things in it that would have appealed. There's a pastoral side to the work of country lawyers. Like clergy, they journey with families in the high points and the low points of their lives over many years, and often they get a real affection for their clients. And I think I might have enjoyed the sense of theatre and drama that sometimes surrounds court cases. But small legal firms like that are not around so much now. Often lawyers now work in big concerns that specialise in complex and lucrative fields of endeavour. The reason why some wealthy people in large corporations are able to keep their tax bills to modest proportions is because some of the best minds in the country are employed to pit their wits against the Inland Revenue and its legal framework. There are mavericks who work pretty much on their own. Some of our star barristers are like that. Their ability to pull off amazing defence cases never ceases to amaze me, which is why I'm clear that it pays to know who the really able lawyers are. They can be very helpful to us at times of great difficulty in our lives. I've also had some very entertaining conversations with lawyers I've struck up friendships with. I recall a Wellington parishioner, a litigation specialist. Two of his more quotable quotes: "Some of my Auckland colleagues could start a fight in an empty room," and "I'm as cheap as chips. My charge-out rate is only $250 an hour." Mind you, that's cheap compared to some. I was in touch with a Christchurch litigation specialist 2 weeks ago who told me that his charge-out rate was $500 an hour. So what, I'm not planning to sue anybody here. I began to wonder then if I should have taken my father's advice after all. When Jesus spoke of the Holy Spirit as an advocate who would be with us always, he was using a word which means, in a sense, a defence lawyer always available to plead our cause. It rather appeals me to think that if, metaphorically speaking, I end up on the dock as a result of following Christ, he will come to my defence as what the Americans would call my mouthpiece. Even if we make our living as a wordsmith and or a fluent and articulate people, it's surprising how often testing times leave us speechless. No matter how extensive our vocabulary or how well read we are, we can find that our feelings flood us and overwhelm our rational ability to speak clearly, calmly, and to the point. So if the still small voice within can direct and defend our best interests at times of crisis, well, that is good news indeed. But there is another level of meaning in this word advocate that I've been thinking about throughout the week. Today's words from Jesus presuppose a close and intimate union between the Christian community and the persons of the Trinity. God dwelling in us, and us trusting and relying on the God who lives within us. This has implications for what we understand is going on in the business of prayer, particularly intercessory prayer. Usually, when asking for God for things to happen, we may have a very polite cap-in-hand attitude. If you could graciously see your way clear to attending to the small matter in our world, that is, if you're not too much taken up with greater matters, and of course understanding at all times that you may say no, because selfish worm that I am, I often ask for the wrong things. The image that comes to mind is that of a beggar coming cap in hand to a king. But if we cast our mind over instances of prayer we read about in the Hebrew Scriptures, a rather bolder attitude is in evidence. The children of Israel argued with God, haggling and bargaining as if in a marketplace. They were into the business of changing God's mind, obtaining maximum advantage for what they cared about, and not slow to point out to God where his actions appeared to contradict his own internal moral logic. Their prayer was a dialogue with give and take, the expectation that both sides might have to shift ground, and an agreed understanding that God took the human partner in the dialogue seriously. outcomes were affected by the quality and the content and the determined intent of this argumentative style of intercession. Which suggests to me that part of Jesus' promise to us this morning is that in our prayer of intercession we may, if we approach with boldness, be taken to God's cabinet, as it were, to become a part of his decision-making process about the world. In a sense, every one of us here is being offered the opportunity to immediately join the cabinet that makes the decisions about the future of the whole of creation. It seems to be part of the paradoxical nature of God that he welcomes our participation in the business of sorting out the world. He wants to hear our point of view. He's open to persuasion. There's a story about an airliner that got into trouble. As panic spread within the passenger cabin, a woman indignantly turned to a priest who was on board and demanded that he do something. "Don't look at me, lady," he said. "I'm in sales, not management." Well, apparently that's not right. We are all invited to have our say at the board of directors meetings, and if we can put up a good case, there will be a change of direction in company policy. Which is one way of saying that after the resurrection, God has come to dwell in intimate union with the Christian community in such a way that our prayer becomes part of the exchange of love and information going on within the Trinity. The greatest defense lawyer who ever lived, Jesus Christ, invites us also into the assizes where our testimony and our defense and prosecution arguments affect the judicious decisions handed down about the fate of what goes on around us. Maybe it's not often that we are thinking or praying with the far-sightedness or unselfishness of the mind of God, but I think it gets to happen more and more as we spend more and more time in the company of God. In that sense, our prayers of intercession have a certain courtroom drama about them. Convincing this judge requires the best of us. Like Abraham and Moses, we can remind God of his declared mission statements and past track record in urging certain courses of action. And a judgment handed down in our favour in this court has truly decisive consequences. Perhaps, after all, I finally got around to accepting my father's vocational challenge. Perhaps each day in prayer I become the barrister he wished me to become, arguing often cases that matter at least as much as those that came before the Rangiora Magistrates Court. Spoken in the name of God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit.